I think a lot of you have probably experienced. You cross the finish line, you're cursing yourself most of the way through the race, you cross the finish line and then go, yeah, I can go faster than that. And then the competitive spirit kicks in, and yeah, that was my first experience.
I did, my senior high school, I did the West Point Triathlon. My older brother was on the Naval Academy tri team, so he convinced me to go out and meet them out there, and I did it on his 1987 Schwinn, the down tube shifting, and just had my Speedo on, and that was it. And I killed a swim. I was a distance swimmer in high school, so came out of the water way ahead of everybody, and I had no idea the rest of the race what I was getting into. And I just remember one of the guys on the Navy team coming by me and saying, "Don't worry, Timmy, we'll teach you how to ride a bike."
Coming up on the Endurance Hour podcast, episode number 31, we are on location at the 7th annual Ironman 70.3 Lake Stevens, just north of Seattle, Washington, and our special Q&A session with Ironman World Champion Marinda Carfrae and the current Ironman 70.3 U.S. Champion Timothy O'Donnell. The Endurance Hour podcast starts now. And welcome back to another episode of the Endurance Hour podcast. This is Dave Erickson on location in Lake Stevens, Washington. I'm here to race the Ironman 70.3 Lake Stevens race, my first time doing this event. Last weekend, I did the Olympic distance race at Rev 3 Portland, so I think I'll be okay for this one, fitness-wise, to tackle this distance this weekend, I hope. I'm excited for this race on Sunday for a couple of reasons. First, this will be my first full 70.3 of the season. It's kind of a long story, but I was signed up for Oceanside in late March, early April, but was given the opportunity to cover Ironman 70.3 Panama, which marked Lance Armstrong's return to triathlon, which was well worth it. Then I signed up for Ironman 70.3 Hawaii, but then again was assigned to cover Lance there in the Big Island, no complaints. And then a few weeks ago, I was at Boise for the 70.3 there, but due to weather conditions, the bike course was shortened, and I only had a ride about 14 miles worth, so not really a full distance. So this weekend will be my first true 70.3 of the season. Now, I'm not in the best of shape, but that's okay. It'll be a good barometer for my fitness, and I do have one more 70.3 on my schedule this year, and that's Boulder in early August, so I think that will be my A race of the year. Another reason why I'm excited to be here is because, for a number of reasons, I'm racing with members of my local triathlon club in Spokane, that's Tri-Fusion, as well as members of the Timex multi-sport team, namely Bo Parrish from Nashville, Tennessee, and Christine Anderson, who is based in Boulder, Colorado. It's always fun and enjoyable when you can see some familiar faces out on the race course when you're not very close to home. The final piece of this excitement puzzle is, stopping by the Endurance Sports Northwest store on Friday evening to meet up with one of our listeners on the podcast, Grant Harrington, who was hosting a Q&A session with Marinda Carfrae and Tim O'Donnell. There will be an auction. There was actually an auction there and raffle, and 100% of the proceeds were going directly to World Bicycle Relief. You should really check that out. World Bicycle Relief has an amazing program elsewhere around the world to benefit people. I believe it was in Africa, but check that out, World Bicycle Relief. So after picking up Bo from the airport in Seattle, we drove over to the Endurance Sports Northwest store, sat in and listened to the Q&A. I, of course, have my camera and my audio equipment there, so I have that for you. So here it is, the talk between Marinda Carfrae and Tim, as well as the audience there. And if you listen at the very end, there was some real-life thunder that clapped right at the very end of the interview. It took a lot of us by surprise, but nobody got hurt. It's all good. So here is that Q&A session at Endurance Sports Northwest.
I don't know if anybody else saw on the event sheets or on the event page on Facebook we put on there. We asked everybody to kind of, ask some questions ahead of time and everything. I know our moms, told us, and rightfully so, that, no question is a dumb question. Well, I hate to say this, she kind of lied. So we kind of needed some questions up front to make sure. So a few things that, we kind of, I think we may want to shy away from tonight a little bit, just for the good of everybody, that we may want to keep out of it. Things like Watts, okay? Maybe marriage, you know? I don't know, restroom breaks, those types of things. We could kind of keep it, you know, gentle in those things tonight, but...
Oh, please.
They had no clue what they were getting there for today. So, Jennifer and I are going to kind of alter questions for you guys for a little bit, and then we'll open it up to the crowd from there. So, we do have some questions from the event page here, but I'll let you kind of go first. You had the first question that you were going to ask earlier.
The one I said earlier?
Yeah.
Oh, well, okay. this can go to both of you. I guess I was sitting there thinking, you know, what would be a good question to ask? And the one thing I was thinking was what's something that nobody's ever asked you that you've always hoped someone would ask you that you'd like to share with people about yourself? You know, just something quirky.
Tito?
I might have to come back to that one.
Yeah.
Is that too deep?
Yeah, that was a hot one to start off
with. Well, it's something quirky about yourself that nobody's ever asked.
I tend to run into stuff on my bike.
You two should get to know each other.
I've crashed into a parked car, the garage door, and two brick mailboxes when I was a kid.
Lately,
a giant cone in Boise. No joke, this cone was bigger than Rainey standing up. And I right over it.
During the race?
Yeah, during the race.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did you see the city?
Yeah.
Did you crash?
I did, yeah.
Oh, well, I didn't see it.
Well, you weren't there.
No.
Okay, so for me, I'm going to go from the sheet.
I didn't really have one. If I think of something, I'll let you know.
So the first one off the sheet, I'm going to steal from Roger Thompson from Spokane. Unfortunately, he's not here, so he doesn't win anything. And Roger asks, is there a bet for the fastest run split in Hawaii this year between you two?
Probably should be. Last year we had one, but then we didn't talk about it after because he didn't finish.
Yeah. That's part of the reason I didn't finish.
Yeah. Last year it was, there was a bet going on. But we haven't come up with any, anything.
Any suggestions?
Yeah. What?
Same bet?
Yeah. Running shoes?
Yes.
No, I got a better bet for you guys. Why don't you do this? Next year, pick a 70.3. And whoever loses the runtime split?
No, not 70.3. Can't do it.
No. But has to do a 70.3 or an Olympic distance triathlon on a WBR bike.
Ooh. Let's do Kona runtime because that's the only time I could.
No. If whoever loses has a slower run.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, whoever has the slowest run has to do either an Olympic or a half Ironman on a WBR bike next year.
That's a pretty good one.
That is a pretty good one.
Yeah.
We can get you on with zip wheels.
Sweet.
Will it take her 58 chain rings? Yeah. The question.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a good one.
So, I do have a personal question for Miranda. Okay. So all the Australians have nicknames: Maka, Crowey, Rennie. Explain this to me. Where they come from? What is it? I mean,
I think everything in Australia is shortened. The service station we call servo. We're just lazy. I think it's Australian slang. Everybody has everything shortened. I mean, I think when you have a child in Australia, you're like, okay, well, but what are you going to call them for short? That's like a question, like a normal question. You know, what's her name? Okay, but what's her nickname? I mean, everybody's. I don't know, just a weird Australian laziness thing.
It's not lazy, it's efficient.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so this next one is coming off the sheet and is from somebody that's here. So we'll hook you up with some earbuds at the end of the night. And this one goes to Morgan Summer Hale. And she asks, even the pros have to start somewhere. What was your experience like? Your first triathlon, but I want to extrapolate. What was your first triathlon, and how old were you?
Me?
Sure.
my first race was, I think I was about 18, and it was just sort of obviously a local race in Queensland, where I'm from. I think it was a 300 meter swim. It's probably, I don't know how many yards, 350 yards. 6 mile bike and like, I mean, 3K. Two mile run. And I actually did really well, but on the swim you could stand up for most of the way. It was in the beach, but because it was only so short, you didn't get very far before you came back. And I remember thinking that this is the hardest thing I've ever done, and this is, I'm never doing one again. And then I finished third overall, I think. And I mean, it was a small race, there wasn't plenty of fast there. But yeah, I mean, as I think a lot of you have probably experienced, you cross the finish line, you're cursing yourself most of the way through the race, you cross the finish line and then go, yeah, I can go faster than that. And then the competitive spirit kicks in, and yeah, that was my first experience.
I did, my senior year of high school, I did the West Point Triathlon. My older brother was on the Naval Academy tri team, so he convinced me to go out and meet them out there, and I did it on his 1987 Schwinn. The down tube shifting, and just had my Speedo on, and that was it. And I killed a swim. I was a distance swimmer in high school, so came out of the water way ahead of everybody, and I had no idea the rest of the race what I was getting into. And I just remember one of the guys on the Navy team coming by me and saying, "Don't worry, Timmy, we'll teach you how to ride a bike." And I finished the line, and I did not want to do another one.
Didn't you break the bike too?
No, that was a tryouts.
If it's any consolation, my mom qualified and did Kona on that Kalinago right there in 1985.
Awesome.
So the down tube shifters,
yeah.
They work.
About seven gears.
It's a sweet helmet.
So, no, that one goes with the old school cross bike.
Okay.
I know who mixed matched them wrong. Okay, so next question is from Colleen Sullivan. She wants to know, where do you guys spend more of your time swimming? In the pool or open water swimming for training?
Pool. Definitely in the pool. We probably never swim in the open water. When we were in Noosa, Australia, we'd swim like once a week in the beach because there was like an organized open water swim. But once you are comfortable in the open water, then I think you're going to get a better workout in the swimming pool. Plus, I'm scared of sharks or any other water. Dangerous.
We got some pretty big largemouth bass, I think you might find
that. Yeah, see, that sort of stuff.
Lake Stevens is pretty grueling.
Yeah. I'm from Australia. We've got one more dangerous animals.
I'm not kidding. There's not much up there.
Yeah.
You have more chance to get hit by a boat. okay. One question for myself personally, kind of what are your big goals for this year outside of Kona? I mean, obviously winning Kona is probably top of both of your goals this year, but throw that one aside. What are the types of goals do you guys have for this year to look to achieve?
Yeah, I mean, Galveston was a big goal for me. And other than that, really just kind of becoming a consistent Ironman racer. I had a great debut last year at Ironman Texas, and then kind of had some struggles through Kona in Arizona last year. And so piecing together good Ironmans and taking the consistency that I have in 70.3 racing and trying to establish that at the Ironman distance.
And for me, it's every year. Obviously, Kona's the number one goal and the race I sort of prepare for throughout the year, but I'm always just trying to tweak different things. This year I'm working a little bit more on my bike, and so I'm trying to become a better cyclist. I've had great success in the run in the past, and I've become known as a runner, and I want to try and change that a little bit. And certainly working on my bike, and obviously we could all, most of us who are non-swimmers when we were kids, could work on our swim. But for me, it's every year just trying to tweak different things and just get the times a little quicker. If I'm making small improvements every year, then I'm happy. So I felt like I've been able to do that over the past few years, and I want to continue that progression. I'd love to go super fast this year, but for me it's more about longevity and making the right choices and the healthy choices, and not necessarily just completely smashing myself so that I'm great 1 year and then done the next. So for me, it's about, I love the sport, I love racing, and making small improvements. I guess the doing the least amount for the greatest gain is probably one of my mottos, you know, because I think that's sort of the healthier way to go about becoming a better athlete.
I don't even know if you might have already asked it. So what's a rest week look like for you?
This week?
Yes.
We will eat and drink a lot and not do any triathlon activities.
Wait, you mean after the race or?
No, this week. We're having a week off.
You mean race week before the race?
Yeah, like race week, you know? Like
after the race. Okay.
Or after.
I thought you meant after a holiday. We're like,
both, maybe. Yeah.
Recovery week? The week leading up to
Table
the race.
Week.
Yeah. Really, I mean, it's all about cutting out all the fluff. I mean, every workout should be precise. You know, you should have an exact goal for that workout. You know, if you're in the pool, you don't have to swim 3,000. You don't have to swim 2,000 exactly. You need to, you know, have a set, and you just need to execute it and feel good. It's better to walk away when you feel good than to. Usually you start to rest a little bit and you're like, oh, I feel awesome, and you just crank it a little bit more and a little bit more, and then by the time at the end of the week, you know, you're a little flat. Cut down the volume and consistency in the different sports.
Yeah, the same. Just rest up for the race, all the work's done.
Don't worry if you feel bad.
Usually. Tape a week blues, that's what we call it. You're not getting your adrenaline. I mean, you're not getting your, you know,
endorphins
from your training. Yeah. So,
Do you guys have coaches?
We do. Yeah.
Who are your coaches?
Mine's kind of more of an advisor, but it's Matt Steinmetz. He used to work for Retool, and he coached Julie and helps Crowe out as well. So, yeah. And he's in Boulder.
I work with Cliff English, who was a national team coach when I was. Doing all the IT stuff, so.
So we are now going to we'll turn over to the crowd, kind of ask some questions. So go ahead, and each one of you guys can kind of raise your hands a little bit, and we'll kind of go from there.
Every question costs 10 rocks.
I have a follow-up question. Mirna, you were talking about wanting to improve on the bike, so I was wondering if you might share some of the details as far as your workouts, what you're doing. To get there?
Yeah, first of all, at the end of the year last year, we started to tweak my position. So that was sort of the first thing we looked at. Obviously, you know, just riding your bike more, you're going to improve. But in the past couple of years, you know, I was with Cannondale and I went down to 650 wheels, but I only got that bike 8 weeks out from Kona. So I was sort of stuck in the same position, don't want to make crazy changes. And then I went to Felt, and they basically made a bike for me with the stem was like fixed, so I couldn't move that position. They made it so it was exactly the same as my Cannondale position, so that I was comfortable right away, which was awesome. But then they sort of didn't make a bike that was adjustable for me until 5 weeks out from Kona, so again I couldn't make any adjustments. And so after I got through Kona this year, we went back and sat down and said, okay, you know, what can we do to change the bike position to be more, you know, save watts. So, you know, we lowered the front end a little bit. I experimented with short cranks. I know a lot of people are going shorter. I went to 155 or 150? 155 cranks. And I trained on them over winter, but I didn't really like it. I raced Melbourne on them, didn't race that well. Then raced New Orleans, didn't race that well. And went back to my 165 cranks. So, I mean, it's different for everybody. For me, it was more just taking sort of risks and making changes in the off season and the early part of the year, just to see where we could make gains in on the bike. But I guess one thing in my training that we've changed is that in the past, a lot of my training was, I changed coaches too, and a lot of my training was really focused on the run. So I'd have my run sessions, I'd be fresher than I would for my cycling sessions. So I'd get more out of myself for the run. Now we've sort of switched that. The week's set up around my key bike sessions. So they're the most important sessions for the week for me. And the run sort of is, you know, obviously still very important, and I want to keep improving or at least continue to be the runner that I am now or was last year. But the bike is, I think, where I can gain the most time. So we're maybe sacrificing the run just a little bit to try and get more out of my bike. So I guess that's the main thing that we've changed, putting the bike as a preference or a priority. I'm riding a little more than I've ever done in the past. Yeah, like, you know, a few changes and we'll see. I'm also, this year I went into the gym and lifted some weights. I've not lifted weights for like 6 years. So in this off season, I had a program. I'd be in the gym three times a week. Did a lot of like strength work through probably 6 months up until now, and I'm sort of going to taper it off now and just do more core work, so just, and maybe maintenance. So yeah, I mean, a lot of changes this year, changing coach, change in weight training. I think that's a big one, and focus. I mean, I think for me, I've been able to get by on my run ability. So I mean, I can give up time on the run and still have a great result at the end of the day. And I think now I've made the decision that no, I want to be a greater cyclist. And I think once you make that mental decision, then, you know, you just go about your business of making it happen. And whether, you know, those results will come this year or in the future, I know that it'll, you know, these things take time, but hopefully by Kona I'll see some results. But if not, I mean, I'm, you know, patience, you know, I've been in the sport for a long time now, and it takes time to see improvements. You've just got to keep chipping away. So I know that, and you know, I think I'm on the right track.
This may sound bad, but kind of sometimes we get dominated by males. So male, female. Are there any females that would like a question?
Come on.
Okay. Sean.
So you mentioned longevity.
No, Lindsay. Lindsay, I didn't see a female for him, so Lindsay.
I just
Well, you're going to go first.
Do you have a mantra? Like, when you're in the run, it's just like feeding life?
Good question.
You know, I don't really have a mantra at all. I think, I don't even know really what I'm thinking about. Mostly just, Jesus, this is hard. but I mean, every time I go up any hill, I hear my coach's voice a lot. Well, my old coach, I worked with her for 6 years, and I worked alongside her a lot, and I mostly can just hear her voice. And so whether it's, she'll say quick feet when we're going up hill, so that, I'd say that a million times when we're going up any hills, or, you know, in the downhills, it's like, okay, relax your shoulders. It's more technique cues for me that I have. I don't have like a, you are strong, the chant that I have. But I mean, that works for some people, and I absolutely, you know, agree that, you know, if that works for you, go ahead and use it. But for me, it's more sort of cues for, you know, technique and, you know, making sure I'm maximizing my ability on the go.
I agree with Rennie. When you're staying in the moment and focusing on the fundamentals, I think will get you through more than anything else. But on the motivational side for me, don't give up the ship is kind of, you know, what rings in my head. I was a Navy guy, and the dorms at school, there's the big flag, you know, don't give up the ship. So kind of stuck with me through the years.
Sean?
So to expand upon your motivation and everything like that, as the season gets longer and you're preparing for Kona and all that stuff, I mean, what keeps you guys' focus so strong? Is it, you know, whooping on all the other people out there, or is it just executing your workouts? Is it anything like that, or?
I think it's smart to, I mean, pace yourself through the year, and I've learned that last year. I mean, at this point this year, I'm really excited. I want to start my Kona work. At this point last year, I had some great races, some emotional races, and I trained with a lot of fear at the beginning of the year, not knowing what I was getting into with the Ironman stuff. So by this time last year, I was ready to kind of throw in the towel for the year. I was mentally burnt out. So I think keeping your eye on the prize and at the end of the year is really important throughout the year. And setting up 4 stops throughout the year. You know, my coach and I sat down, we said, all right, Kona is a goal, you know, Javier or
Vegas
and Galveston. Everything else was designed around that. The other races are, okay, when do we want to break? It'll be designed around this. It's going to force you to taper. It's going to force you to recover. So everything is set up with that end sight.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the mini break. So we have, we're taking a week off after this race, and we will do nothing. We won't swim, we won't bike, we won't run. And then that's sort of just, I mean, you have a couple of days off and you're hungry. I mean, it's what you do every day. So as soon as you have a couple of days, you're hungry and you're ready for that next block. You're hungry for that Kona block. And I think that that's, you know, it's also nice to let your body just recover for a few days too. And that's what I've done the last, I think that's why I've been able to race well in Kona the last few years. I always take a break around this time of year and then the build begins. But yeah, I mean, you know, as Tim said, I think it's important to sort of just figure out where your big race is. Also, another thing I wanted to say was I have key sessions that I get excited about. So there are sessions where you want to beat the last time you've done it. You know, you've got that run where it takes you X amount of time to run from, you know, your house around the block or whatever. And I have, like, you know, 10 1-milers is one of my key sessions, and I do that periodically throughout the year, and sessions like that get me excited. And I like going back to test myself on those sort of sessions. Also, you could have a race that you always go back to every year and you want to improve on your time. I think that those things keep you motivated and keep you excited in training, you know, to meet those goals throughout the year, not necessarily just the big goal in Kona. So for me, that's sort of how I keep motivated.
Sheila?
Yeah, just wondering when or what will be your last race before Kona?
I'm tossing up at the moment whether I do Hy-Vee. I'm not doing Vegas just because, you know, I think it could be ridiculously hot. And for me, you know, I'd love to contest another 70.3 world champs, but not if it's going to take anything away from Kona. And, you know, there's just that question mark as, you know, if it takes 1% away, it's not worth it for me. I'd rather put 100% into Kona and not contest. And I'm sure the 70.3 world champs date will change and I'll be able to contest that again in the future. So I'm either going to do Hy-Vee, which is Olympic distance, 6 weeks out, or I'm going to do Muskoka. But the ideal time for me is 4 weeks out to do a race. That works pretty well.
I'll be on the same thing.
Guys, first of all, just thank you all for allowing me to grace you with my southern, bordering on hillbilly presence. Brandon and I were actually talking. We both had that whole southern thing going on.
You're going to have to speak English.
Yeah, no, just a question just in general regards to work-life balance. You guys are definitely on a different level, but to the same extent, so much of our lives are scheduled, particularly with workouts, where there is a regimen that we follow no matter what. So how does that fit in with the rest of your life? I mean, do you find yourself having to deliberately schedule date nights or sleeping in mornings or taking the dog for a walk? Because I think it's very easy to get caught up in the grind, particularly for age group athletes who love it but aren't putting food on the table by racing in it. So, I mean, anything that you could speak as far as that's concerned to maintain sanity in a household that is not getting paid to swim, bike, run.
Yeah, I mean, we actually, you know, earlier this week we had a date night and it was on the thing like, hey, we need to do this more often because everybody gets into your routine, and whether it's work or for us training, yeah, if you get into that routine. I think it's, you know, maybe if you can focus on, you know, pick a few races throughout the year and realize that it's okay to step away. The hardest thing for triathletes to do, age groupers or pros, is to not train and just step away.
No question.
And I think, you know, what Rennie was speaking to about longevity of racing, it's the same thing. I mean, we can all get burnt out, and this is something, you know, everybody loves, but if you can't step back and realize that you're going to be okay without killing some workouts or going for a run without a watch on, Right. You're going to not enjoy the sport as much or for a lesser amount of time.
Yeah, I think it's almost it's the mind shift. I mean, Dave and I were talking so much of it is psychology. If I don't do this workout, am I still going to perform at the level that I need to? And it's just getting past that block.
Yeah.
It's okay to not do this workout.
Yeah. I mean, any one workout's not ever going to make or break you. And I think you've got to sometimes, let it go. The more I race, the more longer we're in the sport for, the more you realize that, as long as you're, for the most part, on the right track, then it's okay to, deviate from a mindset. Obviously, once we get into our Kona block, it's going to be full on, and we're not going to have much time for anything else, but that's our job.
No date nights during that time, huh?
We still try, but, Kona's that's the great thing about both going to Kona. We understand we're both on the same path. He's not mad at me because I'm tired. I'm not mad at him because we're just too tired to be mad.
Sure.
Thank you.
We're running kind of a little bit short on time here in a little bit, but we got some time for a couple more questions.
Just had a quick question. The training day video that Craig did, that you're obviously a big part of. Is that something is that one of the key workouts for Kona?
Absolutely.
And the other question was for Tim afterwards. What did you do? Because you were on the ride, but you didn't do the run.
Before, because I have no idea what video he's talking about. So,
yeah. I'll tell.
So somebody may want to. Yeah.
It was.
Do you want to elaborate on what the video is?
Yeah. So it was actually Crowe's training day. They come out and they randomly wanted to come out on a Saturday, which was, I can't remember how many weeks out from Kona, but every year I do this session, and then Crowe did it with me last year, and then this year again, he's like, "You want to do that session again?" And it's a session that we only do when we're fit enough to handle it. So it's like a 5.5 hour ride through the mountains. The last hour is as hard as you can go, time trialing. And then you get off the bike and you do 10 by 1 miles, best average, and you put them on like a minute rest. That's the session. Crowe and they got film of that. And that is a session I do every year, a certain period out from Kona. It's one of my key workouts. And Tim came on the ride with us.
I'm probably on the extreme side of it. My similar workout was
probably was
a 135 mile ride with 3 by an hour at 300 watts, an hour motor pace at 30 plus miles an hour, and an 11 mile run off of it with 3 by 15 minutes at sub 6. So. I think I went over the edge a little bit.
And then you just ate everything.
So.
Yeah. Is that it? That's all you did?
Yeah, that was it.
How much is the food bill?
Whole Foods is poof.
That's why Costco is good.
Yeah.
So do you guys have, like a couple of these questions? So a lot of these people here are going to be out at the race on Sunday. Is there, with the crowds, what's going on with the crowds? You guys are racing, I know it's kind of get into the moment and that types of stuff, but do you guys hear the crowds? Do you guys, when they're all yelling and cheering your name and that types of stuff, does it help? Does it get you going?
Yeah, unless it's where Sean half naked with Sean. We try to block that out.
So do we.
You definitely hear everybody out there and you hear people yelling your name. For me, the coolest experience was last year at Arizona. And I was actually walking the last lap of the run. But to have a lot of the age group competitors coming by me, running by me. And cheering me on, like I was like, wow, this is pretty cool. I mean,
that's not cool.
It was cool. It was cool.
Welcome to the life of an age.
I think another question that I kind of wanted to ask is, what's it like to put it to Lance?
That was cool.
Yeah, that was cool.
A lot of people asked if I said anything or everyone I ran by, but He was actually running really well when I went by him, and I wasn't feeling great. So I actually accelerated and tried to pretend I was feeling good. Well, I guess it worked.
Yeah. Running past like this to give you a little bit of extra motivation, like kind of put something deep down, like, wow, that Lance Armstrong.
Yeah, it was. But it was weird because he had 90 seconds coming off the bike, and then I closed it really quick, and then I sat like 20 seconds behind him for a while. So in my head, I'm like, I'm not catching him anymore, you know? But yeah, I mean, I guess it's pretty cool. Yeah. Nice.
So we've got probably time for about one more question. So well, we have two hands.
Two more questions. Race strategy. How much of your race strategy ends up being what you plan on doing ahead of time and pull off versus what you have to adapt based on what other people are doing?
I think it's different for the men and the women. The men's race, I mean, we'll talk to Kona, and, you know, that's the race we all prepare for. The men's race is, I mean, Tim can talk about that, it's more tactical. But the women's race, I think, for the most part, you know, you're out there, and most of the day I'm sort of by myself or maybe with one other athlete for periods of time on the bike, but you're kind of just going as fast as you can, you know, within reason, you know, so, I mean, yeah, for the most part, I'm just doing the best I can for the whole day. There's not really any tactic involved. Obviously, you're certainly watching your competitors and you're aware of where the key players are throughout the race and watching those. But, you know, if someone's going to, you know, take off on the bike, you're already riding it to the best of your ability, so there's nothing you can do about it. You just have to hope to God that get tired on the run. Hope they walk like Julie did last year.
Is that why she's going to Xterra this year?
She's injured. Yeah. She'll be back in Kona in 2013. I might have to take the year off.
So are you going to take her up on the Xterra gig at some point?
You know, we're actually both talking about doing Xterra this year for fun. We're not going to, I mean, I'm not going to go anywhere close to what she can do.
29er or
I don't think they'll make it. Imagine a 29er with one. It would just be like two big wheels.
We'd be able to see over the wheel.
Yeah.
We can find some clip-ons.
Yeah.
That'd be great. So, okay.
Just curious what you do for recovery. I mean, longevity, that's important. What's the best method that you utilize?
We both big Normatec boot fans for compression. You know, obviously compression when you travel. Definitely massage, and we both do ice baths as well.
Yeah, I mean, massage for us is probably key. We try to get, I mean, when we go into our big blocks, I'm in there twice a week, just to make sure everything's loose. You know, when you start to get super tight muscles is when you run into injury problems. So for us, massage is key, yeah. And then chocolate milk.
Wait for it, there it is.
Yeah. Drink a little chocolate milk.
I believe.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, making sure, you know, immediately after training within the 30 minute window is to get in the carbs and the protein. That certainly helps recovery, move the recovery on quicker. Mm-hmm. Yeah, as Tim said, compression, ice bath, all that good stuff.
And listening to your body. Sometimes, even though you have another hard workout scheduled, you know your body better than your coach does, and sometimes it's better to reevaluate.
Yeah.
You said those known boots. I'm talking about the recovery legs.
Yeah.
The compression.
Yeah, they
help. Do you see a chiropractor?
I very rarely will go in and get an adjustment, but yeah, I mean, from time to time.
Yeah, I saw one this week, actually.
Yeah.
Did you get me a pair of those boots?
See, we need to line some up.
We can get you a discount.
Unfortunately, she saw them this weekend.
Did you experience neck pain on your long bike ride?
Absolutely.
How many hours in does it take to get to start feeling, oh, gosh?
Depends. Sometimes.
Yeah. 5 minutes sometimes. Yeah. Isn't that the worst? You're like, oh, this is going to be a long day.
How many saddles have you guys been through?
Crashing or not crashing?
Just for comfort level.
I don't like to change my saddle. Once you wear it in, you're like, stuff that. I'm not. Don't give me another saddle.
Well, guys, hey, let's all give him a round of applause. And so for those, I know that there are a few people who have not gotten autographs just yet. So let's try and, you know, they've already gone over their allotted time a little bit. But let's try and get through, finish up some autographs really quickly and efficiently. And again, thank you guys for all coming tonight. We really appreciate it a ton. And let's make sure to give them an extra loud cheer when we
see them.
They could not have timed that clap of thunder any better. My thanks to Grant Harrington of Endurance Sports Northwest for hosting the event, and to Rennie and Tim, of course, for their time. Both of them are the favorites this weekend to race at Ironman 70.3 at Lake Stevens. There's a nice little article right now on Ironman.com previewing the race by Sean Skeen, so check that out. Not the deepest field this weekend, but still some good names on the pro starting line. That will do it for this special edition of the Endurance Hour podcast, episode number 31. I am hoping to recruit my friend, Bo Parrish, to sit down for a post-race podcast report from Lake Stevens. If he's okay with that, that will be on our next episode, and I think I can twist his arm to do that. Until then, this is Dave Erickson. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend of training or racing. We'll see you next time.
Don't let me hear you say life's taking you nowhere. Life's begun, nights are warm and the days are young.